Hard work beats talent when talent doesn't work hard. That's why when it comes to hard work, nothing works harder than a Chevy Silverado. No wonder Chevy Silverado is the official truck partner of the Chicago Bears. Check out a new Silverado at ChevyDriveChicago.com.
So many misconceptions about Yoko and John and Yoko. With us is someone who spent a lot of time with both of them, David Sheff, the author of quite a few books, including the number one New York Times bestselling memoir, Beautiful Boy, which was turned into a movie in 2018, starring Steve Carell and Timothy Chalamet. David's work has appeared in the New York Times, Rolling Stone, and many other places, and now he's appearing on WGN Radio. David, good to have you with us. The book is fantastic, a biography of Yoko. Her story has never really been accurately told, has it?
Well, first of all, thank you, Bob, for talking about Yoko. And I mean, that's really why I went forward to write the book. I realized that there are so many misconceptions about Yoko, so much ignorance about Yoko, and so much, frankly, sort of prejudice against her because of her race, because she was a woman. I mean, she really was always considered an appendage, really, of John Lennon and in the shadows of the Beatles. And so I decided, you know, after knowing her for many years since I interviewed her and John in 1980, to go forward into, you know, to tell her story, finally.
I think the story of how you got close to John and Yoko is fascinating. You really won their trust and ultimately began decades of friendship with Yoko. How did that all start?
Well, I was only about, I was 24 years old. I was an aspiring journalist. I was writing query letters to magazines, trying to break into magazines like Rolling Stone and Playboy and Time and Newsweek and many others. And I got an assignment that was really a dream assignment to interview John and Yoko if I could get to them. I took that sort of as a challenge, and I ended up writing a telegram to Yoko's office. I was able to get a contact there. And I got a call one day from somebody who asked me when I was born and where I was born. I told them, I gave them the information, and the next day I was called and I was told that Yoko had used that information to do my astrological and numerological charts, and based on those, she agreed to meet with me. It was at a time when she was deciding what interviews that she and John would do when they were coming back after not making any records for about 5 years. They were coming back recording Double Fantasy, and they wanted to do some press, and I was just lucky. I mean, I guess I was lucky to be born where I was.
Yeah, I'll say. I mean, and you describe them both as being gracious, funny, passionate, fiercely unrepentant, and completely candid. And I imagine myself in your position, and it would be hard for me to concentrate on my work because I would keep thinking, I'm sitting here with John Lennon, and I'm sitting here with Yoko Ono. Wow.
Yeah, that's exactly what it was like. Again, I was really young. I was excited to be on an assignment. I had an expense account. I was staying in a fancy hotel in New York, so the whole thing was kind of overwhelming. And then suddenly, I'm sitting across from people who, I mean, I grew up obviously on the Beatles and on John, and I was, I mean, as you say, he was really kind of, they both were very gracious and very open and very kind. And I would forget that I was who I was talking to. And, you know, John would be telling me a story about something that happened when he was in Spain at one point in his life. And he said, oh, and by the way, when I was there, I wrote Strawberry Fields. And it was a moment like that I was struck. I was like, oh, my God, okay, this is John Lennon.
Yeah, pretty amazing. Now we have the book, Yoko, A Biography by David Sheff. Did your publisher hesitate to green light this book because of Yoko's role as a villain? Did you get any pushback because of her negative image?
Oh, that's an interesting question. Actually, you know what? I had an editor who was really sort of, his take was the opposite. It was a little bit, I guess it was like mine. He was really interested in Yoko and learning more about Yoko. And when I wrote up a proposal that really summarized a bit about her life, he realized that he was like everybody else who, you know, he thought he knew Yoko. He had this image of Yoko, but really had this image of Yoko as the person who broke up the Beatles, as this, you know, force who came in and destroyed John Lennon's creativity and all this kind of stuff that, you know, is really all nonsense. But that is the way that people, I think, were thinking about Yoko at that time. So he was thrilled with the idea of telling her story, and he gave me the green light very quickly.
Yoko isn't a saint or a sinner, is she?
No, and she didn't pretend to be, and I think that was one of the unique things about Yoko and John. I mean, by the time I ended up going back to write the book about to write Yoko's biography, I got to know her very well, and I was a friend. I considered myself a friend, and so I really had to struggle with whether or not I could write a book and be objective about a friend. And because Yoko had amazing talents and amazing strengths, and she also had some dark sides. I mean, she suffered depression. She was suicidal when she was young. She really struggled often, and especially, of course, she struggled after John, after her husband was murdered. And so I had to really wrestle with whether I was going to be able to talk about both of those sides of her, sort of the light, the excitement, the creativity, all that she contributed to art and music and politics and all that, and also some of the darker stuff. And I decided that partly because of who Yoko was, she and John were all about, you know, give me some truth. I want the truth and nothing more. That's a Yoko lyric. And so in some ways, they talked about everything in their lives. And so there wasn't anything that I felt was forbidden for me, direction for me to go. They talked about their drug use. She talked about the problems they had in their relationship when they split up and finally got back together. I mean, all that was already on the table, and so I just went deeper.
We've always heard that when Yoko was first trying to get close to John, she was hanging around the Beatles' offices at Apple. She was described as kind of a pest, a groupie, a weirdo. How do you describe what she was really like in those days? Any of that accurate?
I think it's not accurate. I think that one of the legends is that Yoko was, you know, had her sights set on John. But the truth was, from what all the research that I did, people who knew her then, people who knew them then, people around the Beatles then, Yoko was involved in her own life at that point. She was having a sort of a creative burst in her art. She was gaining a lot of recognition, a lot of attention for her art. And she had an exhibition in London that was going to be her first solo show there. And someone brought John Lennon in to see a preview of this exhibition. And he became very quickly smitten by her. She was sort of curious about him. She was interested in him. She didn't know much about the Beatles. I mean, she'd heard of them, but barely. She says that the only thing she knew about the Beatles was she knew about Ringo, because the word Ringo means apple in Japanese. And so that was sort of the extent of her knowledge. She didn't even know who John Lennon was until one of the art students who was helping her set up the show came up to her and said, "Oh my God, do you know who that was? He just was in the gallery." So she was not pursuing him. She had her own agenda. And people maybe, you know, don't believe that. People think that she was a gold digger, that she wanted attention. She wanted to connect to, you know, to John, to a Beatle. But it's just really not true.
Mm-hmm. The big revelation, I think, in this book, and my number one takeaway, Yoko gave John the strength to do what he really wanted to do. She didn't break up the Beatles. She actually kept the Beatles together longer, probably, didn't she?
Yeah, that was one of the things that really struck me. Yeah, Yoko was always vilified as the person who broke up the greatest band in the world. But what happened was, as I dug deep to learn about what was going on when they met, you know, John was very, very unhappy. He was overwhelmed. He had been churning out one Beatle record after another. He felt overwhelmed and really would talk about the fact that he was very depressed during that time. And he had a foot out the door of the Beatles at that point. Yoko helped him in so many different ways. She really inspired him to create again. She inspired him to do what he needed to do. And one of those things was just she accompanied him to the Beatles recording sessions. And it all of a sudden dawned on me that if Yoko wasn't around, John might have checked out of the Beatles earlier. And so, you know, I suggests that perhaps instead of blaming Yoko for breaking up the Beatles, we should thank her for keeping them together, you know, during the period when they wrote their last couple, when they made their last couple records. She really helped John during that time, helped him survive, and then helped him have a rebirth after that when he started to record and to be, you know, to make his own records, create his own art. Mm-hmm. He really found a new life when he met Yoko.
As you point out in the book, Yoko always said nice things about the Beatles. She called them creative, talented artists. The Beatles never commented much on Yoko, certainly not positively. But right. The hate directed at Yoko was overwhelming. Did it change at all when John and Yoko moved to New York? Was it better for them here than in England?
Well, in England, she was vilified, and they were vilified as a couple. You know, people would hang out in front of Apple, the Beatles record company, and, you know, when Yoko and John would walk by, they would scream at her to go back to her own country. I mean, there was all this racism directed toward her. The tabloids were vicious toward her. You know, one of them ran a giant headline as Yoko, the most hated woman in the world. When Yoko and John moved to New York, they found it much, much freer there. There was not the same kind of attention. There was not the same kind of microscope on them, and there was not the same kind of prejudices against them. I mean, it still wasn't always easy, and there still was some hatred directed again as you know, because that's when John did leave the Beatles, and suddenly he was having a completely new life and creating new work as a solo artist. She was still blamed in some quarters, but it was nowhere near as vicious as it was in England.
I had never read or heard about how Yoko broke the news of John's murder to Sean. It's in your book, and also the crazy calls and letters she got after his death. I mean, it's heartbreaking, isn't it?
It was beyond belief. I mean, Yoko, obviously her husband, her partner, her lover, her best friend, clearly her best friend, was murdered right next to her. And she was completely traumatized by that. And she had to deal with a whole world of, you know, first of all, the attention to the murder. She had to help try to, she had to break the news to her son and to John's son, Julian, as well as to Sean. She had to cope with the betrayals that started the day John died. People started to steal from her. They stole some of John's journals. They stole his guitars, his amplifiers, others of John's. I mean, people saw John's death as an occasion to cash in. And Yoko had to deal with unbelievable stress during those years, and she barely survived it. It was harrowing. And I met her again. I came back to see her the day I got on a plane. I was living in California, and I flew back to New York to see her the night John was murdered. And I wasn't able to see her to get into the Dakota, her home, for a few days. But when I saw her, I saw a person who was completely broken, mm-hmm. who'd been as she was in as much pain as I'd ever seen mm-hmm. anyone in my life. And yet, she was able. She had to deal with, you know, so much right from the beginning. It was absolutely appalling. And when I finally was able to go back and reflect on some of that time with her, she admitted that it was. Yeah, she said she, if it was not for her son Sean, feeling like she needed to survive for him, that she probably would not have survived that period.
She didn't want an Elvis-like funeral. Did she ever reveal what she did with John's remains?
She had John was cremated right after he was murdered, and as far as I know, she just kept the remains in a urn and has kept them throughout. Since then.
The book is fascinating. It's a biography by David Sheff, Yoko, and I went back and looked at your book, All We Are Saying, The Last Major Interview with John Lennon and Yoko Ono, which it's incredible to read this, the Playboy interview that you did back in 1980, John, at one point, goes through all the songs, how they were written, who wrote what, did Paul do this, did John do this? Did any of that surprise you back then, the stories behind the songs?
Oh, God, yeah. I mean, I was stunned by some of that. I mean, some of the songs that I considered masterpieces of the Beatles, John would dismiss and say, oh, that was a piece of junk that Paul and I, you know, did in 5 minutes or something like that. Or he was very dismissive of a lot of Paul McCartney's songs. He said, for instance, of the song Yesterday, it's a beautiful song. I never wished I'd written it. One of the things that was really fascinating is when he talked about the collaborations, he said, he talked about what he contributed and what Paul contributed and how together they made some of the Beatles songs that are the most amazing Beatles songs, the most amazing songs by anyone that's ever been put to, that's ever been written. It was fascinating to do that with him.
Can people still get that book that came out a while back?
The publisher put out a 40th anniversary edition a few years ago, and it's available. It really reflects the whole experience. I mean, I went back there, and you know, as you know, if you get to interview somebody, if you're lucky enough to get an interview with somebody who's a great, you know, one of the great stars in music or art or acting or whatever it is. I mean, you know, journalists are lucky to get an hour or two with these subjects. But I had 3 weeks with John and Yoko. And so this interview that was published as All We Are Saying is a the complete interview. So the interview that took over three weeks to complete with them, with both Yoko and John, and it really does go drill down deep into all those Beatles songs and John's solo songs and Yoko's solo songs as well.
That 1980 Playboy interview with both of them in the Dakota, still, I think, the definitive story of John, his life, his music, and his time with Yoko. What is Yoko's life like today, David?
Well, she retired from work a few years ago. She moved out of New York City, where she'd been in the Dakota for since she and John got in the Dakota decades ago. And she lives now in upstate New York. She has a very quiet life. She spends a lot of time with her son, Sean, who's up there quite a bit. She's not making more art or more music. And by accounts of her, but of Sean and also her daughter, Kyoko, who was another source that I had for the book, Yoko lives a very quiet but very peaceful life up there in New York.
The new book by David Sheff is Yoko, A Biography. It's a great read. Appreciate the time this morning, and keep these books coming, David. Thank you.
Thank you, Bob. Thank you so much. Have a great one.